Hi, welcome to BioBalance Podcast. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, the founder and medical director of BioBalance Health. Brett is here today with us, and he's going to introduce himself. And then his subject has to do with my new book. It stimulated his creativity about the subject of libido.
I am Brett Newcomb. I'm a marriage and family therapist and an instructor at a local university in the counseling program. And I've been a family counselor for 30 years now. And Kathy and I met in working together with some families that were coming to see her or me, and we cross-referenced, and we started having a series of conversations. And if you have been tracking these conversations, several of them lately have focused on the concept of cultural universals. And I saw in the news this week that Levi Strauss had died. And Levi Strauss is a famous anthropologist, and he is considered to be the father of the anthropological concept of structuralism. And what we have been talking about dovetails nicely with what his theories are. And basically, the theory of structuralism is that there are universals throughout the community of man that are cross-cultural. And so there are some mental processes that seem to be universal. And that actually dovetails with what Piaget said about structures in the brain being universal, like the Piaget and Chomsky, the language acquisition device, is hardwired. We are hardwired to learn language in our youth, infancy and youth. And so we were talking about, where this fits for us, is that we were talking about universal concepts of attraction and of sexual appreciation, sexual energy, the development of the human physiology along a timeline that fits sort of cross-culturally, and how do various cultures adapt to incorporate those changes in the human physiology and make them acceptable within the community. Mm-hmm. For instance, one of the things that I've taught about for years is the idea that adolescence as a stage of life is really kind of a new thing, maybe 150 years old or less. Mm-hmm. And that's come out of the modern industrialized society and the changes that it has required of the way families exist and the way families function, because we have what's called delayed adolescence. And I was noticing in the book that you are writing a reference to that exactly. As we talk about people living longer, the evolutionary changes in our lives isn't automatically matched by an evolutionary change in hormone production and the occurrence of testosterone and its role in reproduction, in arousal and desire, and so on. So I thought today we could talk about where those concepts come together in what we deal with, me in the therapy office and you in the medical office, mm-hmm. as people try to adapt to the reality of living longer and to the changes in society as a result of that, while they're still dealing with the physiology that's pretty much the same as it's always been.
That's exactly what we deal with. What I deal with is people walking in and saying, I'm not old, I'm only 40, but I've lost this, and I'm getting old, I feel old, and I've got to live another 50 years, which is true.
Yeah.
They probably will, because now we are healthier, better water, better medicine, better longevity in this country and in most European countries, not all over the world. But we now have to deal with the problem of what do we do with the next 50 years as we age? Now, we can make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
We can, as some of my patients say, I want to be as natural as possible. I just want to come in and just do nothing. And if I do nothing, what'll happen? I said, well, then you'll get old. You'll look old.
You
won't have sex and you'll die.
Yeah.
I said, so that's aging.
That's natural.
And that's natural. I said, but the minute we made that first step of taking a drug or having a surgery or trying to make ourselves healthier or drinking clean water or trying to or eating well,
mm-hmm.
we made that first step past normal aging. We are now the same human body that the cavemen were. Yet we've now made ourselves live to a certain point then we age just like they did, if they ever got there. Most of them didn't live to 40. 40 right. was death.
Yeah, and in a lot of primitive societies around the world, the life expectancy is still under 35.
Right.
You know, and so you have a statement in your book that society has changed, but that testosterone remains the same.
And that's absolutely true. Testosterone starts going down, and probably it went down a little earlier when we weren't as healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But in our society, it's probably around 40, and it starts decreasing in women first, then men. But as the studies have shown, men are starting to drop their andropause is what we call it when testosterone is decreasing,
mm-hmm.
and we start having symptoms from it. Men are starting to drop that age down into the 40s, which is not a good sign. That means that we're doing something wrong to decrease that when we should have had a healthy lifestyle, and it should have lasted into the 50s for most men.
Well, and we don't know what's causing that, but we have ideas, we have theories, and the one that you keep talking about in our conversations is all of the hormones and steroids that are put in the food production systems. You're talking about being so much in the animals and in the feed that's given to the animals that it gets into the water supply, it gets into the milk supply, and so we don't know how much additional hormones we receive.
We even receive hormones from drinking out of some water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
The bottles themselves, the plastics that we use, have then gotten into our environment, and they act as estrogens in our body. That's really not good for men.
Wow.
And that they think that's one of the primary things that has kept us from achieving a normal andropause for men. Women tend to have to become mature earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And have like larger breasts and more estrogenized things, and then more estrogenized tumors as well from this plastic. It's not the same as when we make our own estrogen. It's also not the same as when we give back bioidentical estrogen. What I do is try to combat or replace the hormones that begin to wane in our 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I go upstream. I find the first thing that I can control. I can't control water bottles. I can't control feed and cows. I can't control any of those things. I have to...
Milk consumption.
Yeah, I can't stop any of that. Our society in the West has become very dependent on those things. But I can get to the first thing that changes,
mm-hmm.
which is testosterone dropping in women, growth hormone dropping in women. And I can measure it and treat it, replace it. That then stops this cascade of all of the other hormones decreasing, all the other hormones causing us to age by being insufficient. So it comes down to our society in terms of being human. We used to have a shorter lifestyle because we weren't as healthy. Then we got a longer life.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had all of these basic things cleaned up, immunizations and clean water and more food. So we lengthened our life, but we still have not lengthened the quality of our life.
Well,
at 40, we get old.
And that's what's fascinating, because one of the things you learn about children is that children think that what happens in their life is natural and happens to everybody, until they get to be in the fourth or fifth grade. And then they start doing comparative analysis. You know, oh, Joey's parents let him stay up at night. I wish I could go live at his house. You know, they get to do mm-hmm. this. But until that level of frame of reference changes, they just think this is what happens. And so what you're talking about is a thing that our culture is dealing with. We just think that that is what happens. Doctors tell us that that is what happens. Well, you're just getting old. This is part of the process. You have to learn to live with it, or there's not a lot that we can do, or what have you. And societally, many of us feel the same way. Like your patients that come in and say, I just want to do it the natural way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have then cultural elements that don't seem to adapt to the changes in reality. You know, like one of the cultural elements is the evolution in the industrial society of what we call the love marriage. You know, for centuries and centuries, marriages were familial negotiations, or they were acts of conquest. You run to the next village, grab all the women, and take them home. So, I mean, you have cultures that are structured around this is the appropriate way to set up breeding patterns and to acquire women. You don't marry within the tribe.
You go get somebody from outside. You have to mix up the genetics. So that was based on a scientific...
And it makes sense.
A scientific truism. A lot of things that we think are instinct
are
scientific truisms. If you marry your cousin, then you're going to magnify the genetic defects for your children. So you have to marry someone
different. We learned that in Arkansas when I was a kid. Actually, I think in Tennessee, when I was a kid, I don't know this is true anymore for all of you out there in Tennessee, I was taught that in Tennessee you could get married without parents' permission at 14 if you were pregnant. That was 50 years ago. So I'm sure that the culture there has evolved. But what we were talking about is the idea of the love marriage. Because now in an industrial society where family wealth is based on wages and not on land ownership, then we support ourselves differently financially. And so now we seek partners that we are interested in, that we're attracted to, that match something within us. We don't just have our families arrange a marriage. And so we have successes and failures. You know, the divorce rate is 50%. Why do we pick the people that we pick? Why do we have divorces? How do we come to understand the dynamics of the changes in marriage that go along with the dynamics of the changes in an individual, especially in terms of their hormones, their libido, their sexual drive? How does that all play out? And again, in the 40s and 50s, it was very commonly said that families would stay together because they couldn't afford a divorce. Because most housewives stayed home and didn't have independent incomes. And so there was abuse and there was limited opportunity and it just was a cultural standard. Now, most families are, quote, non-traditional. Statistically, most families are non-traditional in that it's not beaver cleaver. Mom stays home, dad goes to work, and you have, you know, 2.5 kids and a golden retriever and a station wagon. It just isn't the standard anymore. It has changed. So how do we navigate through that now that women have options that they've never had before, that medicine has alternatives that have never existed before? Can we learn to combine the positive things that we know to help people create enduring, stable, happy relationships, or at least pursue individually happy lives for themselves where they're not trapped in a box that's a culturally defined box?
Let me recap. We have inborn things that are common to every society.
Right.
We have inborn needs to merge, to have children, to have a somewhat of a stable family to bring up children. That's common to every society. We were meant to populate the earth. That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. That's hardwired in our brains that we should do that. And except for a few exceptions, that happens.
Well, and in primitive societies, they structure themselves to accommodate that. And so when you go through puberty and you become capable of getting pregnant, having children, and therefore making demands on the resources of the community. Somebody's got to feed and shelter and protect your child. Then you have to be held accountable as an adult. So they separate the boys and girls, and they have what are called rites of passage, which are introductory ceremonies of one kind or another that then qualify you, and they mark you with a tattoo, with filing your teeth, with whatever, so that everybody that sees you will know that you are an adult and therefore you're responsible for the choices and actions that you make and for the responsibilities that society expects you to satisfy. If you don't have those marks, you're a child, so there's a lot of latitude and forgiveness because you're a child. Mm-hmm. In our culture, we have rolling access to the rights of adult status. And so you get a driver's license, you get a high school diploma, you get your first job.
You're 21 and you can drink.
Absolutely. Or, you know, the old argument in Vietnam when I was a child in the Vietnam era that, you know, we could go off to war and we could fight and die, but we couldn't order a beer.
Yeah, I know. I lived through that, too.
Yeah.
So, and that seemed pretty ridiculous.
So the culture changes. Right. And so we have a phenomenon now where we have children in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade who are physiologically becoming sexualized, but with cultural messages that say, no, no, that's awful, don't do that. We haven't figured out how to teach that, moderate that in a consistent way for our society. And yet these children live in a media community where they have access to really hardcore sexualized stimulation.
Even if they didn't, their bodies are sexualized.
Looking for it. Absolutely.
And that's still another thing that's a common thing for every society. Once you get testosterone, which happens first in girls too. I mean, mm-hmm. boys and girls both get testosterone, and that, you know, the testosterone is what begins the body odor thing in junior high, and hair under the arms and
feet
stinking. That's the first thing that happens before breasts, mm-hmm. before the growth spurt, before periods for girls. So, and then boys just stay on this locomotive that just keeps becoming higher and higher and higher testosterone level, which causes them to become mature. But it all starts earlier than our society wants it to. But that doesn't mean it's not happening.
It's reality. And right. The culture has to adjust to the reality and find social accommodations that work for the greatest number of people.
And but so, where we are is on the other end of that.
Exactly.
We're on the other end where our hormones are going away too early for our lifespan.
Which is also part of that cultural adaptation. How do we adjust our society to accommodate that? Or does that have to happen? Can we prevent it? Can we regulate it in a new way? The physiological adaptation. And that's where your science comes in and complements what I do. And that's going to be the focus of our next conversation, because we're running out of time for today. And what we're going to talk about next time then is where you have identified the hormones that begin the cascade events of aging and what we know about how to change them in safe and consistent ways so that people don't have to be Cinderella's. And, you know, it's midnight, the clock strikes, and the carriage turns into a pumpkin, and it's over.
That's exactly what I deal with every day.
There's 12 more hours, you know, in the day. And so that's what we'll talk about in our next conversation, and I hope people will come back and listen to that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your anthropologic and psychological input into this very difficult problem. And next week, we will talk about aging begins when testosterone drops, and that begins in our 40s and 50s, and the impact it has on us and what we can do about that. If you have any questions or comments about our show or about bioidentical hormone pellets, please email them to podcast@biobalancehealth.com. We also invite you to visit our website, biobalancehealth.com, and learn about all of our services, including supplements, skin rejuvenation, and our complete line of botanical skincare products. You can call my office at 314-993-0963. You can also read my blog, drkathymaupin.com. I'm also writing a book, and part of that will be in the blog. So thank you for listening. For Brett Newcomb, I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin.